Hello again, and thank you for joining us on the Providence College Podcast. I'm Charlie Joyce, your host today. Our producer is Chris Judge of the class of 2005. Our guest today is Pat McNiff, a member of the class of 1996. Pat is a sustainable livestock farmer who produces farm-to-table products at Pat's Pastured. He farms more than 150 acres, including an 87-acre farm in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. Pat's a Long Island native. He recently was selected to Go Local Prov's 20 to Watch in Rhode Island in 2020 list. At PC, he majored in history, minored in public and community service studies, and he played lacrosse. He also holds a master's degree in community economic development from Southern New Hampshire University. Welcome to the Providence College Podcast, Pat.
Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Here we are in the midst of another New England winter, although by no means has it been harsh. What's the state, and we're glad for that, what's the state of the farm like in terms of activity and your animals at this time of year?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. We a lot of people think farmers, especially in New England, just kind of go somewhere warm and don't do anything all winter long, but we're really busy this time of year. We would love it to be a little colder because it helps us kind of work out in the field a little more easier instead of having just mud. But we love, you know, the winter time's our time. We do a lot of planning for the upcoming year. We do a lot of our marketing, figuring out what we're going to do for our marketing for the year. We look at our marketing content for the year. We plan what we're going to be raising this year, who's going to be getting it. We still have animals on the farm as well. So we still have laying chickens and ducks. We have pigs, we have cattle. We have our livestock guardian dogs, we still have a crew of people who work here doing projects, fixing things that we might have broke during the season, and getting ourselves ready for next year, for a big year.
Sure, sure. So the priorities shift to some degree in the wintertime, is that right?
Yeah, so in the summertime, you know, most of the year we're moving animals every single day. In the summertime, in the wintertime, they're a little more set in place. We deep bed them, we kind of think about how to make their lives good during the wintertime, just like we like to keep warm and cozy as much as possible, while still letting them be outside and kind of express their natural instincts. So it shifts a little bit in terms of that side of things and just really thinking about what we're doing next year and improving.
Pat, your way of farming is extremely interesting. It's so agriculturally and environmentally sensitive. Give our listeners an overview of the farm's mission and operations and really what leads up to those high-quality food products.
Yeah, well, I mean, our mission statement is, you know, our family farm is sustainably raises grass-fed and pasture-raised livestock to supply, you know, the best quality meat and eggs for our customers. And, you know, we want our community to know how their food is humanely raised and processed and how the practices that we use on the farm are really healing the land while we're doing it. So that's our kind of overarching mission as a farm. And, you know, we really believe strongly that, you know, if we're going to eat meat, we should eat really good, high quality meat that's raised in a sustainable manner that provides really tasty, really delicious quality food for people and is really healthy. And I think we in the United States especially have gotten away from what, you know, good food tastes like in a lot of ways to being a more industrialized way of looking at the food system. And also gotten away from what animals really need to live a high quality life to produce that product for us too. So, and that animals really can, if you raise them a certain way, heal the land rather than really take away from it.
You know, that's a good segue to what I wanted to ask you about in terms of the livestock. What kind of livestock are you raising currently? And, you know, what do you feed them, Pat, to make them such healthy producers of food?
Well, we raise cattle. You know, cattle are ruminants. They have multi-chamber stomachs, and so they're able to eat grass. So we feed them, you know, in the summertime, they're eating on pasture. So we rotate them every day to fresh paddocks of grass, and they get a nice salad bar every day of grass to eat. And in the wintertime, they transition to hay, which is stored grass, and they'll eat that all winter long as well. And we give them minerals that are part of that, that they eat free choice, and then really great fresh water. Our chickens, pigs, you know, our ducks aren't multi-chambered. They don't have multi-chambered stomachs. They don't have ruminants. So they have to eat a grain diet as well as eat pasture and that. So they're on pasture, eating grass, eating bugs, you know, pecking and scratching and doing the things that those kind of animals do, but they also receive a certified non-GMO feed that we provide to them as well to supplement their diet. And our pigs actually will feed them other things too. And when it's apple season, they get apples from our local orchard. Pumpkin season, they get pumpkins. We feed them all different variety of things as well, because pigs are omnivores and like everything. So,
you know, it's apparent, I think, that your animals' grazing and habitation areas are important to their flourishing and obviously to you. Give us an idea of the kind of environments they feed and live in. And you did mention a little bit in terms of your cattle just a couple of minutes ago, and your, exactly your role in that.
Yeah, I mean, ours is kind of orchestrating their movement. So, you know, if you think about animals in a prairie land or, you know, a big open space, they're constantly in motion, and they're doing that for a couple of reasons. One, they're moving away from their own manure. They're also moving away and herding up for protection from predation, but also just moving to better quality feed. And, you know, that's how we got the Great Plains in the United States. And the, you know, that motion is what we do. And we try and mimic that and how we do things. So our cattle move ahead of our birds. The birds come in behind it and kind of clean up and also spread the manure of the cattle and spread their own manure as well. And they're on there for short duration, you know, and long recovery. So there might be a lot of cattle on there for a day, and then the next day they're gone, which sometimes when people drive by our place are upset. They're like, where'd they go? But for us, it's really important to keep them moving, because that's really how they live a better life, as well as the land improves and develops. And that's how animals can be used to improve land. That, you know, good number of animals on short duration with long recoveries.
So is that the case pretty much with all the animals in terms of, I'll say, like rotation of location or properties or
not? Yeah. So that is that how we, that movement is always happening. And, you know, that's the hard part. You know, a lot of people are used to seeing animals in one place, but when you do that, they can, you know, take away from the quality of that environment, build up of manure and get smells and everything else. But by moving them, you're really kind of creating a healthier environment for them. So they're constantly moving. The cattle, like I said, are moved every single day. The chickens are moved every 3 days. And we do that with portable electric fencing. And our birds are protected by, we have dogs that live with the chickens and turkeys and whatnot. And they actually live with them to protect them from predators, because that's one of the biggest challenges of being a pasture-based livestock operation.
And do the animals orient well with so much, transition, I'll say?
Yeah, I mean, they want, like, you know, when we open the fence for cattle, they run right into the next place. When we open the fence for the chickens, they want to move. That is in their kind of DNA to be mobile and to be moving. Because, you know, they're trying to get away from a lot of, you know, trying to improve their life too, just like us, right? They want to eat better things. They want to eat the next thing. They want to get into a new, you know, grassy place to hang out. So it's kind of in their genetics to do that. So they want to be moving.
Are your animals producing some kind of food pretty much year round, Pat?
Yeah. So we raise, we do process the only, our chicken, which is pasture raised chicken. We only raise that, when the grass is green, cause we move them, those chickens for meat every day. And so we only raise that until, you know, November or so, and then we freeze it and we use that until the grass greens up again, and then we start raising them again. The chickens are laying eggs this time of year. Cattle are still producing beef for us. Pork is being produced by our pigs as well. So, you know, everything else, every, you know, we're constantly producing meat or eggs in what our operation is doing.
Sure. Sticking with the retail side of the business, Pat, you sell your products in multiple ways on the farm, through home delivery, at farmers markets, to restaurants, and you're also a part of this the CSA, the Community Supported Agricultural Meat Shares Program. Where are the bulk of your sales?
So most of our sales are, you know, about 80% of our sales are retail, and about 20% are wholesale. So wholesale are to restaurants, and we sell it to some of the best restaurants in the state and outside of the state. And about 80% are retail. So, you know, you mentioned home delivery, which is new for us this year. We just started doing that this past summer. So we're, you know, you order online on our website, and then we deliver every Thursday to people's houses. And, you know, right now people really expect to get stuff right at their door. So we have to adjust our business to do that. We sell at farmers markets. So this time of year, we sell at one farmers market just ended, but we sell at winter farmers markets in Pawtucket, in Newport. And then we have our farm store. And then in the summertime, we sell at five farmers markets throughout the summer as well. And then the CSA program is a basically a subscription, and it allows people to pay in advance, which gives us some upfront capital for our business, and kind of gives us upfront cash flow. But then they, in return, we give them a discount, and they can a la carte kind of choose what they want, any of our retail locations to pick what they want for their families.
And, you know, I'm not familiar, Pat, with the CSA program, but I'm assuming that's some kind of a national program, is it, or is it regional?
Well, CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and we us farmers sometimes get into jargon. We're like CSA, and we think everyone understands what that means, but CSA kind of started in Japan and in Europe as a way that people wanted to make connections with their farmers to find healthy food. You know, and farmers, the hardest thing as a farmer is you plant a seed or you raise an animal, and then you hope when you finish raising that, you know, carrot or that chicken, that you'll be able to sell it. And that's a lot of instability for farmers. And it was a way for consumers to commit to farmers, pay them advance, give them some cash flow when they needed it, but then at the same time, getting a great product at the end. And so it's a great way, that relationship, that support, the mutual support between a family or a person and a farmer. So it's not a program, but farms all around the country, from produce farms to livestock farms to fruit orchards and that, are using to kind of support their farm. Ours is a little unique. Some do like pre-made bundles. Ours is, we use a swipe card, like kind of like almost a credit card. That's our meat card, our meat money card, we call it. And that allows us to people to get what they want.
You have a staff, obviously, but what amazes me is the intensity of your workday. I'm sure it's very varied, and you know, you've got these massive acres to oversee. Lots of livestock. How extensive is your time in the retail end? How much can you devote to that end of the operations?
Yeah, well, as our farm has grown a lot, you know, back in the day when I started out, I was actually working at another vegetable farm, managing that, and I was doing this, and so I did everything, you know, from feeding the chickens to marketing to everything, delivery and everything else. And as we kind of grown, it's we've gotten to have we have a great team here at our farm and really wonderful people who work for us. I'm very lucky in that way. And I've gotten, you know, my time really is focused. You know, it's like any business. I'm kind of the CEO of our company now, and I have to think about some of the bigger picture issues too, like from the standpoint of marketing to you know, following regulations, to food safety issues, to trucks and equipment. I still do feed animals. I still do a lot of the hands-on work, but also having to do higher leverage work to kind of really develop ourselves as a business, and a business that supports our staff, you know, staff training and HR issues and everything else. So it's like any company. I get my office, I have a great view, and I get to go outside and do wonderful things as well too. So it's really rewarding.
Good. Yeah. There's obviously a lot of upside, and you're really, content, very at peace with what you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pat, obviously there's lots going on here and around you. You're heavily invested in the livestock, grazing and living environments, as we've referenced. Their diets, you're very much involved in land itself and obviously producing high quality food. When and how did your interest in agriculture and your, environmental sensitivity develop?
You missed the Providence College agricultural program that they used to have in 96, I guess.
Yes, a little bit. I've heard some of that. Yes.
People are always like, oh, you went to URI. People assume because URI has a cooperative extension in that. And I'm like, oh, no. I went to Providence College, you know.
One of our specialties, right?
Yeah, exactly. Got to be careful, you know. But anyway, so I was involved in community development work through the Fine Center Institute at Providence College. And, you know, like you said, I had a minor, I was the first year they had a minor in public and community service studies at Providence. And, I was really committed to community development work. And, mostly I worked a lot in community organizing in the Smith Hill neighborhood, and also worked with, kind of at-risk youth through the drop-in center, which is now Capital Center Community Centers, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, I was really involved in that. And one summer I got offered a job to continue to work with these kids, you know, a bunch of them were in gangs and, you know, having a pretty tough life. And, it was around a garden, and that was how we were going to work with these kids. And I really enjoyed working with them. I was, getting ready to graduate, and it was a great opportunity. And, but I didn't know anything about gardening or farming really, other than, you know, my joke is our livestock at home was a poodle, growing up, and our vegetables were like, we had one tomato plant and some marigolds. So I didn't grow up in a farming background from the suburbs. I'm from the suburbs of Long Island. So, but what I came to find out is that, like, I loved working with these kids. I loved the community side of it and the power of kind of land, and food, and what that did in our communities. It brings people together of all different backgrounds. We all exist on land. We all exist eating in some form. We all have traditions and history around food, and it really builds community and really can have a really, important impact in people's lives. So that's how I got kind of interested in agriculture. And then it kind of grew from there. And I was a vegetable farmer, and I worked at the Southside Community Land Trust for years, and started a program during my master's thesis, to start a farm business incubator. And it kind of grew out of that, and one thing led to another, and suddenly I'm driving tractors, and I really started loving working with animals, and that grew into its own business, as kind of a side hustle from being a manager of a vegetable operation. I didn't graduate with this. It wasn't my intention. And it, like, when I came to Providence College, but, I just really, you know, a farmer also, I love diversity in my day. And a farmer's got to be a marketer, a scientist, a writer, everything, organizational theorist. And that's really appealing to me, because I feel like a lot of times people see farmers as the ones that weren't very smart or didn't make it out of town. But I think farmers are some of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life. I'm really honored to be called a farmer. So, yeah.
Yeah, obviously a lot happened then while you were a student here in terms of your eventual course, I'll say your life passion. There's a lot of what you mentioned, writing and planning, marketing plans, that I would assume you can attribute to your PC education. Can you talk about some of the educational benefits, and maybe were there particular courses or faculty members or experience that really, really profoundly affected you?
Yeah, I mean, I came to PC. I like you said, I was a lacrosse player. I was excited to play a Division I lacrosse. I only played for really 2 years. I did love the sport, but what I did, my first introduction to PC is I worked in the Smith Hill neighborhood during Urban Action, before school actually started, and then kind of ran that later on. So that had a profound effect introducing me to the community. My family is was very involved in service and serving other people. And that's a really important part of my growing up. And PC really, that first introduction to Urban Action was really powerful in that way. I worked with Sharon Hay, over there for a number of years, which was great. Through the years, I got, the Feinstein Institute was really powerful, working with Keith Morton and Rick Battistoni, and a lot of the other professors there, some of which have now retired, really had this amazing effect in learning about experiential education, community development work, social justice, and really putting that in a context of doing, like, experiential learning, just not talking theory, but actually making a difference and going out there and working on it. So, that program itself was a huge impact in my life. I went abroad for a semester, which was wonderful, to Ireland, and then really came back and being involved in that. And then I've taught in the Feinstein Institute. I taught actually a couple of years ago in the Global Studies Department on sustainable agriculture. So those all had a really profound impact on my life and kind of my direction, and just even bringing me to Providence and to the Smith Hill neighborhood. And eventually, I lived here longer than anywhere else now in Rhode Island because of coming to Providence College.
Well, it's funny. You certainly haven't forgotten your alma mater. I mean, you've been, a real true community partner to us in Friartown. I know, too, you've hired and hosted some PC students from time to time. And as you made reference, there was one course in particular that I can recall, I think, that you co-facilitated 3 or 4 years ago that involved a service trip to an island, I believe, off of Nicaragua. I think it was a food security course, I believe.
It was a sustainable ag and food system course that I taught, co-taught there. And it was really a great experience. The global studies department there, which wasn't there when I went to school there, it was really great under Nick Longo, who I actually graduated with too. And now he's was the chair and teaches in that department. So he's gotten full circle as well. And it was a great experience in introducing PC students to living kind of off the grid and using composting toilets and eating organic food and really seeing the difference. You know, like a lot of them had never been outside of the United States or been into a developing country. And that was a really profound experience for them. And, a number of them have gone on to maybe not farmers, but working in the food world and the food industry, which is really exciting for me because both my parents were teachers. My wife is a teacher. My whole family are teachers. So education is a really important part of my life. So, passing it on is really important as well.
You know, that comes across so well. And obviously, we've referenced some of what you've done with the PC and students. You also mentioned earlier, and I believe it's on the website, too, about the farm camp that you have. It seems to me, tell us a little bit about that. But it seems to me that education, I'll say, and responsibility, this is all kind of a part of your mantra as a farmer and really as a person, is it not?
Yeah, like I said, I can't get away from it. I literally live with a teacher, and she's a fourth grade teacher at Paul Cuffey School in Providence. They're right up the street from PC. And my parents were both teachers. And so an education, if we want to change the food system and think about how we can, change how we eat and how we treat kind of our earth and how we look at things. It's all about education. It's about teaching the next generation. I didn't grow up eating like this. I didn't grow up thinking about food in this way. And I really was both educated by really great mentors and teachers, and also just by experience. And so we really, with the camp, we're teaching kids, where their food comes from and how it's raised. They're collecting eggs. They're in our vegetable garden harvesting. Kids are leaving at the end of the day and saying to their parents, they ate egg salad that they made from eggs that they harvested and cooked. And they're like, parents are amazed that A, they ate it because they don't eat it at home. B, they cooked it, and C, they harvested it. So it's, that is like foundational in terms of experiences for young kids. And what I've been working on for many years in my life is to kind of like, how do we teach the next generation? And we have to have that kind of open heart to think about teaching people. If we want to see change, true change. And I really experienced that at PC when, like I said, was mentored by some really wonderful professors in the Fine Center Institute and the Public Service Department there. So that's really important to me.
Yeah. And how, what are the ages generally of the children who take part in the camps on the farm, Pat?
So so this is one of those things department wise. I get my wife up here because she's the camp director. I kind of make everything happen. But we have a young program, so we have I think the youngest is 5, all the way up to middle school, and we have half days for the younger kids and then full days for the older kids. It's not a sleepaway camp; it's a day camp. And shameless plug: we are signing up kids next month to start signing up people for camp. So those are the age groups. And one of the things we also do is we fundraise really actively to make camp affordable. So, we have people who pay full price, but we also scholarship children from, mostly from urban areas, from Providence and that, who couldn't afford to come to camp because Kelly works in an urban school district in Providence. And we kind of really believe that we want to have as much access to things as possible, for every kid to have this experience, even if they live in the city. So we really actively fundraise to scholarship kids, almost like a fresh air fund as well. So that's an important part of what we do too.
Excellent, excellent. Pat, thank you really for a fun and an informative conversation. You're obviously doing really healthy and wonderful things in your life passion.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, and good luck to Pat's Pasture.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us on the Providence College Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast in all the usual places: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. Thanks again to our producer, Chris Judge. I'm Charlie Joyce. Until next time.